Hi, I'm Bowen Yang, and welcome to Search Party, the podcast, brought to you by iHeartRadio and HBO Max. Think of this as an audio companion to the dark comedy series you can't help but binge watch. You might even be obsessed with the show, because the theme of today's podcast is obsession, which is great for me because I'm currently obsessed with both of our guests today. We have Search Party co-creator Charles Rogers and actress Shalita Grant, who you know as Dory's lawyer Cassidy Diamond. We're going to get deep into obsession as well as what makes Cassidy tick. And overall, it's a very good conversation. So let's go. Let's go listen. Come on. Okay, joining me today are two reps from the show. We have Charles Rogers and Shalita Grant. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, so the theme of today's episode is obsession. Let's kick off the conversation by asking, what's a thing you're obsessed with right now? I'll start. You know, I am really excited about Rihanna's Fenty skincare launch, and so I was just watching a bunch of videos of different people sort of trying out the product, commenting on it, reviewing it, and so far the reception has been glowing and positive. So I'm obsessed with the not the skincare itself, but the sort of meta conversation on the skincare.
Mm.
Yeah, that's my obsession currently. Charles, what about you?
That would never be my obsession.
Sorry.
I respect it, though. God, it's so horrible, but honestly, just Instagram. It's so terrible. It's like I'm the most hooked I've ever been right now. It's not good.
Well, it's not that your obsession is with your engagement with it, which I think is very novel and very, very good, and it excites people.
No, it like that's the healthy. The engagement is like the creative part. It's literally just the like the checking. Like the autopilot clicking is like, it's an addiction. Maybe it's addiction, not obsession. I don't know. I don't know what the difference is.
But that distinction is
something to talk about.
Something to talk about. Absolutely. Shalita, what about you? What are you obsessed with?
Okay. So this is a recent obsession. Yesterday, I started looking at I May Destroy You.
Oh, yes. Wonderful,
and
wonderful show.
I'm obsessed with it because it's the first show that is actually dealing with our sexual boundaries in this sexually liberated place, which is actually what I want to talk about today.
Okay.
I want to talk about sex.
Baby.
That's obsession.
Right?
That is obsession.
I want to talk about some sex. And I will talk about what Charles and SV did that was like, you guys like captured this thing that is so just like it's intrinsic. It's very intrinsic to our culture and what we're used to seeing. So we don't really think about it, but it's very uncomfortable. And Cassidy has a line about it that I actually, in thinking about obsession, I was like, what do I want to talk about obsession? And I was like, I'm going to go uncomfortable. I'm going to go where I'm uncomfortable. And then I did a bunch of research.
Wow. That makes me so happy to hear.
I mean, if I'm chatting, I want it to be of substance, or else I'd be like, sorry, darling, I got nothing for you. I'd rather
I got nothing for you.
I think Shalita should host the podcast.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's done the work. Whoever does the most work.
Yes.
The nasty nerd.
Let's start off this conversation about obsession. I feel like obsession is built into the very first shot of the show, of the entire series, where Dory is kind of staring down this flyer for Chantal. I don't know that maybe I'm just grafting on obsession as a theme onto that sort of moment, but I feel like it sort of is the spark point for the rest of the series, where Dory is like fixated on this image of this person that looks familiar. Oh, where do I know her from? And things just sort of unravel from there. I mean, this obsession is the sort of the combustion engine for the whole series is runs on obsession, I think. Is that fair to say, Charles?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that what that makes me think about is like, what is the sort of overlap with obsession and projection? Like, I feel like a lot of obsession has to do, for instance, the only show I watch, which is, you can go ahead and just kill me after this podcast, is The Real Housewives. That's the only thing.
Yes!
That's the only thing I can.
Yes!
And these people, like literally continue to exist in my brain after, and I think about them throughout the day as these fictional people that now live inside my brain. And it's, I like on some level, it's because I think with obsession, there's like a lack of resolve. Like there's something about the lack of resolve in like, I will continue to obsess. And they say like in therapy too, it's like you continue to live out like trauma patterns and trauma responses and like obsessive thinking because there's a lack of resolve around the emotional core of that thing. And I feel like that's kind of like something about projection and being like, that person isn't finished. That idea is a part of my identity. I want that to be my identity. And I'm working through it with this thing, other thing.
I mean, that's such a good example of the housewives, because these people do like live rent free in all our brains on some level.
They are rent-free.
And like how because it's like how does that even happen with anybody or in any case where it's like with Dory, like why do you as the creator, as one of the co-creators, think that Chantal is able to like kind of penetrate through all these different layers of Dory's psyche?
I think it's a projection. I feel like that's when Dory is like, I want to feel that these inclinations I have can be validated, and that I feel like I'm not good enough or that I'm overlooked. Like the victimhood aspect of that, she projects onto Chantal, and then, you know, the reality of Chantal is nothing like that at all. So I kind of feel like, you know, and with, like, I think reality TV weirdly has a special place for that kind of obsession because they are real people. And the fact that you can't go in and you can't fix their problems and you can't look them all in the eye and say, look, you did this and this is because of this and because of this, it's unresolved. Like that energy is like, there's something unresolved in yourself that's like, I got to resolve them, you know?
Wow. Interesting. So what's unresolved about Chantal's situation for Dory that she becomes so obsessed? Oh, it's beyond projection, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, what do you think that is?
I think it was that Dory had a lot of pain that no one was seeing, or she didn't feel was being honored on the level that she was implicitly requesting, like never actually asking for, but being like, I deserved for my pain to be honored in some overt way. And this person symbolized an opportunity to siphon all of that pent up feeling into her. And, you know, like, like also Claire is such like a doe-eyed, you know, like little spirit that like you could easily think that that's what she is, you know, but
sure.
No, she's a brat. She's a crazy brat.
It's so funny. I think that's a very good point, because I think that what happens over the course of the first season is we're, as an audience, led to believe that Chantal is in danger. Dory is so insisted upon that circumstance for Chantal. And then things get inverted by the end, where Chantal was never really in danger. She was just chilling out in this house, but that Dory has built up this setting and this environment of danger by the time she and Keith sort of explode in this emotional way, right? Because Keith was sort of obsessed with Dory on some level, would you say?
Yeah, I don't think Keith was like a squeaky clean, total innocent. Like, I think he didn't deserve to die, but he gave her enough reason to feel uncomfortable with him.
But like, what is it about that relationship that, like, because I mean, the chemistry reads so naturally between Ron and Alia. What is it, this like mutual obsession between these two characters that sort of buttress each other up to the point of like total escalation where, you know, this murder happens?
Yeah, and I think that Dory also projects onto Keith. Like she sees him as this kind of like adventurous guy who he kind of represents like everything that isn't her friends and her world. Like he's out there doing it, and like that's kind of like she's seeking, she wants to feel alive. Like and I think she wants to feel alive at any cost. And she doesn't know that yet about herself. And And Keith, you know, she's like a gorgeous young cool girl and he is kind of a sad sack and she doesn't know that yet. So they're both kind of projecting onto each other. And Keith also doesn't know that she's like capable of killing him out of from spiraling. So it's like everyone's sort of just like seeing what they want to see in each other.
Totally. Speaking of Dory being this young, hot, cool girl, that sort of gets woven into season three where there's this media obsession with Dory. This public obsession with Dory as this media figure now. And I kind of feel like that's what motivates Cassidy to represent her, maybe. And I think you see some of that subtext in the clip where you first meet Cassidy as an audience.
Dory Seif, Cassidy Diamond. And it's an honor to call myself your lawyer.
Hi. It's so nice to meet you. Thanks for getting me out of here.
Oh my God, that's an incredible handshake. It's firm.
I'm sorry, but how old are you?
30 and single.
Okay, so how do we start?
Well, the trees have ears, so we don't talk here. So I rented us this luxury SUV. Figured you wanted a touch of glamour after a hard night.
Oh, that's nice. Do you do that for all your clients?
I plan to. You're my first case.
Wow, I had to go back and watch that scene, I think at least three times. I was so electrified. I was like, who the hell is this? This is so funny and fun.
The wrist. It's all in the wrist.
It's so much like gesticulating, hand acting. Shalita, okay, talk to us about Cassidy, what you were trying to pull off in this first introduction.
So I too am inspired by the Housewives. And like just these people's they have zero qualms about the potential humiliation. All they're interested in is the fame. And that is, that's like a trying to achieve something. And I actually have a lot of, you know, I'm a girl in the culture. So yes, I've made a lot of questionable decisions when it comes to fashion and hair and makeup to try to, you know, fit in, like to let the ladies know, like, I know what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a part of it. And you look back and you're like, wow, you look ridiculous. But it's about like, you know, trying to fit in. So when I was thinking about like, Cassidy as a person and like how she presents in the world, like that hunger for fame and the word like authenticity, that's like so buzzy right now, like you know, being your authentic self and going for the thing that you want, that's what I wanted to highlight with all of her extraness.
I mean, it just all falls in the right place. I mean, all of these things fall in the right place, especially in these introductory moments with Cassidy. I feel like there is this subtext in the dialogue of that scene where Cassidy's like, it's my honor to call myself your lawyer. Here, you know, here's this car that I got for you. I figured you would want that. You know, there's this like supplicant element to it where
she's sycophantic because she's a fucking fan. Just like jumping on what Charles said about things being unresolved and about obsession and about that projection, there are so many people who want that fame, and so they see opportunity in the most abject places, like a murder trial. So people like Cassidy, people like, you know, the girls that show up, you know, all of those people, like to what Charles was saying, like they're projecting their dream of visibility on these people who have done very questionable, morally questionable things. And it makes you wonder, like, what kind of but that's a judgment, right? Like, and that's why I wanted to go deeper than just like my first inclination. So on your point, Charles, about things being unresolved, so there is a a paraphilia called hybristophilia. It's a paraphilia in which sexual arousal, facilitation, and attainment of orgasm are responsive to and contingent upon being with a partner known to have committed an outrage, cheating, lying, known infidelities, or crime, such as rape or murder. It's so crystal clear to me, obsession. But what is a little more, like, where could I go deeper? And I thought about that scene where Cassidy is coaching the parents. There's a knock on the door. And there's this girl who knocks on the door with lasagna. And at the end of the scene between her and Drew, Cassidy says, women get criticized, men get pastas.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the surface, it's very like, oh, gender inequality. But I was curious because that scene made me uncomfortable. Like, I had a judgment about that girl and the girls that we see on the steps of the courtroom who are interested in Drew in a sexual way, in a romantic way. I was curious about that. So I just typed in, why are women sexually attracted to serial killers? That's what I just typed in. And then I found hybristophilia. And I was like, oh, thank you so much, Google. Yeah, this is going to help me figure it out. Because at the bottom of this, a psychologist's theory about the why, right? Like, the hybristophilia describes the what, right? This feeling, this desire, this need, right? The what. There are people who are trying to understand the why. And so a psychological theory is that this is about love avoidance. Because when you look at the attached, so this is in attachment theory, right? So attachment theory is about how we are our dynamics in relationships. So a secure attachment is a child who feels safe in their home and in their bodies. And then from there, we have three other kinds of attachments. And one of those attachments is avoidance, right? So when you look at the dynamic, like what's actually happening, these women are like, they're like, oh my God, Ted Bundy, right? Oh my God, Ted Bundy. Right. They didn't know who Ted Bundy was until he was known to have committed this crime, right? So he went to jail. Like, he got time. Like, he did life. But there were still women who were like, I want to be with him, and wrote him love letters and tried to have sexual, a romantic relationship with this man. But there's no, these women don't have the ability to consummate these relationships. So going back to Charles's unresolved, like, they're this love avoidance allows these women to hide why they actually don't have the thing that they say they want, which is a monogamous, committed relationship. They can lie to themselves about why they don't have what they have, because they're like, oh, my love, the person that I want, is Ted Bundy, who happens to be in jail. But love is love. And this feeling is, it makes no sense. So that's going into the romanticism, the philosophy of romanticism around love. But like, yeah, this love, it makes you do things. And so, yeah, I don't want to analyze why I haven't had a stable relationship and why I live the life that I live and why I'm unhappy. I don't have to analyze that because I do have love, and it's Ted Bundy. He just happens to be in jail right now.
Yeah.
My repository for my love is to put it in the most
unavailable person. So it's love avoidance, because you say you want love, but you're not actually getting it.
But avoidance as attachment is such a weird paradoxical thing.
Isn't it?
Like, that's wild.
Isn't it?
And even with the Ted Bundy stuff, it's like the historical conception still is that, well, Ted Bundy was this handsome guy with like knife skills or whatever.
It's so much deeper than that. And that's the thing.
Totally.
Like, when it comes to women, there is just this across the board for generations and generations, just this desire to be like, it's whatever. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she's hysterical, you know, whatever, you know,
sure.
Like there isn't a desire or a belief that women have wondrous emotional worlds. And there are many reasons why a human being in general do the things that we do. Like, it's across the board.
After this quick break, we'll continue discussing the theme of obsession in the context of Search Party with Charles Rogers and Shalita Grant. Stick around. On the subject of Cassidy, what do we think is unresolved about her that sort of has her glom onto Dory's case so much? Is it that she's like probably just passed the bar like 20 seconds before the scene that we meet her in, and that she, this is her first case, and that she like wants to prove seconds. Herself? Probably. I don't know. I'm willing to believe that.
What a day.
My fan theory. Yeah, what a day. What a day.
What an afternoon.
And an SUV rental. But I wonder what we think that is. What is unresolved about Cassidy that she would become obsessed with Dory's circumstance?
I think that it's an obsession with the need for success and what success gives you, which is validation and being seen, right? Mm-hmm. And so somebody who's fresh out of law school jumping onto a murder case that's like the sensation of New York City, like that's like, I mean, you have to wonder, like, that's so misguided, and we would call that person so naive, and she is, she's super naive. So it's like, wow, there's so much that you don't know, but there is that her desire to be seen, you know? Yeah. And I would guess that maybe she wasn't like the best, you know, in law school, but she worked really hard. And I would guess that she probably has some, shame about the money that she has and about what people think about how she got what she got. So there is a need to prove to the haters, I guess, prove to, you know, the inner me that you are worthy, that you know, it's that wrestling with that imposter syndrome of like, you're not worthy of your desire. And her being able to confront that belief that she's not worthy of her desire, she decides to do that from the outside in by seeking this outward validation by winning this case. Like, if I win this case, I will be happy. And then I will show everyone that I am the best.
And in the scene following the one that we just saw, when they're in the car and Cassidy's walking Dory through her options, she goes, the most attractive option to her is to plead insanity, because she goes, everyone's mentally ill, or everyone wants to be mentally ill. But this is a moment where like she's projecting onto Dory this thing.
Yes. Like, yes. Yeah. Yes. That she wants what she wants, which is to get to be as flashy and to be as, you know, as possible, to be as popular as possible. Right. So this is how we're going to win. We're going to win with the people, because in Cassidy's mind, and Charles and SV set it up, like, they have the attention of the people and the admiration of the people. So it's like, go crazy, bitch. Like, let's go balls to the wall. Like, let's do it. Like, give totally. It, give them what they want.
Totally. Wow. I really want to dig into this, media frame around obsession, and especially with the characters on the show and the difference between the way that the public sees Drew and the public sees Dory. We talked earlier about the pasta, and Drew ends up having sex with this juror played by Eudora Peterson later on, and starkly contrasts with the way that Dory sort of moves through this as a public figure now, right? I mean, that's a conscious thing, right, Charles?
Yeah, when we were writing it, our original, it was going to be Gory Dory and the Cuck Killer was going to be the like the idea of it. I know. Like, I'm glad we didn't, because it was when 3 years ago when we were using that word. I don't think it would have been so timeless. But then it was like, it's a harder game to play, like the Cuck thing, because it's like, what do you do with that? And then the truth of it, too, is that it's just not as truthful. Like, maybe that's kind of like a moment in time where like there was, you know, that theme floating around, but it's not as timeless as like the gender, the way that, you know, like whenever you see like people saying like Karens and Kins, it's like, don't say Kins. No one is saying Kins. Like, you're just trying to make it sound like there's an equal playing field out there right now.
Right.
And it's just, That's kind Absolutely. Of we wanted there to be like Beatlemania around Drew.
Right, because even like, you know, I mean, even with the character of Drew being so sort of hapless and kind of whatever, I mean, he still becomes the sexual object even I mean, not, I was going to say in spite of like this murder charge, but like kind of paired with that. I mean, it sort of like makes sense somehow to people. But let's play this clip that Charles, you brought, which is Dory working out on the treadmill next to this woman. It's very, very scary scene, very tense scene. Let's play it.
I can't believe that. Some people are just plain vile. She's so guilty, don't you think?
I don't know.
I've been reading up on it. The DNA is all over the body and she was having an affair with him.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The only reason she's not already locked up for good is because she's pretty. If I ever met her in real life, I'd spit in her face. You tricked me, you little cum whore. If you don't get out of this gym right now, I will rinse your filthy, shitty little mouth out with dish soap.
Okay, I'm gonna leave.
I will not work out in a place where little murdering sluts break a sweat.
Yeah, I'm trying to leave. It's not working.
Get out. Shoo! Oh. Shoo, you get out, you bitch! Get out! You get out, you little murdering whore! You slut!
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Shout out to Ann Carr, who is one of the funniest and best people I've ever known in my life. She's so good.
Very, very good. Yeah, like let's break that down. What was sort of the thrust of that scene for you as a co-creator, as a writer?
That was actually the middle of the season, like leading up to, it was like when we were in the writer's room, it was like, okay, so like midpoint in the season, the trial starts. So what happens before then? Like it was a little confused. It was kind of like, this could just be like episode 2, trial starts. You know, it was a little tricky to break. And we were like, okay, we should spend the first half showing how they're becoming famous and how it's changing their lives. And this episode actually changed a lot. And it's actually one of my favorite episodes in the whole series. I just really like all the scenes in this episode. And there's something about, oh, well, like we wanted there to be paparazzi. And at first it was going to be like the paparazzi wouldn't leave her alone. And then it was like, we actually just need one scene where you see like a person in the world say all the things that like the world is thinking. Like you just need to see it through the lens of like one character.
It is just so unfortunate that like someone like, I mean, and it's such a double, it's a bi-directional thing where it's like, so this person is saying the only reason she's not locked up is because she's pretty, but then the underbelly of that is that she is being subjected to this wildly gendered, like violent treatment by the public. Still, I mean, there is no actual reprieve or recourse for Dory in any sort of scenario here, like pre-trial, during the trial, after the verdict. It's like she's still going to be in this horrid prison cell for the rest of her life, just in terms of like the way people perceive her.
Yeah, and I think the reason why we chose to present it that way, where it's like a white Brooklyn woman in a gym, was like there's so many moments in Search Party where it, like whenever people are being like mean to another person, where it's like, I'd rather do the version that you're like, oh, weird, than like the version that you're like, of course. Like that's because that's exactly how the structures are. But like the fact that that woman, I always think about how strange it is that this like Williamsburg or wherever, it's a little undefined.
I loved it because I feel like I see that all the time, actually. I think about the LA car chases, right? And the why, right? I was listening to Charles and you and thinking about that scene. And so LA has, it's, it LA loves their car chases. They love them. And so they trend on Twitter, you know, and since the pandemic, it's been pop a lock in LA has been like Grand Theft Auto, like twice a week. You got Bonnie and Clyde's, like everybody, wow. Like the helicopters, every, then they drive through the hood and everybody's like, hey, you know, whatever. But inevitably in these car chases, there are citizens who do things like throw things at the car or try to ram the car. You know, these people mm-hmm. who get involved. And I think about the why, and it's because they want a part of that story. Like they want to say that I was the guy that said, you know, that lady with the disappeared kid. She's like, I was the lady that took the photo of her at the rental car agency. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's my part in this story, you know, because mm-hmm. again, it's just baked into our culture that, you know, we all want to be famous.
Well, wow. This discussion is great because, and it goes back to this woman on the treadmill next to Dory. And what connects that and the car chases and all this is this, vigilante streak that everyone is trying to sort of prove mm-hmm. In themselves, where they're like, I would have done this, I would do this, I would throw my brick against I would throw my brick at that car.
Yeah,
I mean, it's obsession mm-hmm. but it's insertion too. It's this thing of like, I would get in there, I'm so connected to this thing that I know what I would do in that situation so clearly. And then it kind of just, that's a macrocosm for Dory. I mean, for Dory in the very beginning of this whole show, just being like, okay, there's a missing person. It's this acquaintance I made in college. I'm going to insert myself in that. I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put myself in that circumstance.
The whole insertion thing is like, my therapist was saying that a big part of our obsession with death, and especially like with, not to go too dark, but like suicidal ideation. And like, I have a lot of obsessive thinking around suicidal ideation that I don't even truly mean. And I'm just testing myself constantly to see how much I truly love myself. And it's mm-hmm. an, you know, I'm sorry, this is like too much, but like, it's a lack of resolve around self-love. Like, that's all it is. And my therapist was like, people's obsession with death is that in a world, in an existence where there's no definition or clarity, that it is the most definitive idea we have. Like, death is just like the only definitive part of life that we have any access to. And so like, in a weird similar thing, I feel like people are obsessed with inserting themselves in other people's narrative because it's a similar like seeking to understand your own relationship to whatever the idea is that you're projecting onto them or that you're associating with them. It's like, I would believe that I'm a hero. Like in that car chase, I am a hero. And so I'm going to imagine it. And then I'm going to decide that I would do that in that narrative.
Yeah.
And it's seeking definitive checkpoints and markers and standards about your own existence.
Let's move on to this question. Why are people obsessed with Cassidy? There is an obsession with Cassidy, I think. There was a palpable, like, there was a moment when everyone sort of keyed into Cassidy. I mean, what is the obsession with Cassidy about?
When I think about Cassidy, maybe I'm coming at it from like a queer white gay guy perspective.
Yeah.
But when maybe definitely I am. But like I think of like did you guys see Judy, the Judy Garland movie?
Yes.
I personally loved it. I'm sure it was good. Yeah, it's a B minus. But whatever, I liked it. But there's like two gay guys in it, and there's a scene that I should not have worked for me, but it really did. Where Judy realizes how much meaning she brings to them and how she carried them throughout like really hard moments in their lives. Mm-hmm, and she, it's like this wake-up call for her where she's like, oh my god, like I do things I'm not even aware I'm doing,
and that's her legacy, and that's beautiful. Yeah,
it's mm-hmm. like, and she doesn't know how to contend with that. And right. It's I really love it. I think it's really profound in it. And I think there's something particularly about women where Cassidy is this hyper feminine, but also bold, and the energy is so self-realized in you, Shalita. Like, it's like your energy is so strong and so of its own. Like, it's so like you're just like a one of a kind person. It's just really you're captivating. Like, you're so captivating. Mm-hmm. And it's like those combinations, it's like there are, I think the archetypal nature of women is like that goddess type of thinking is like so truthful, and it's what we are all unable to fully channel. And when I think that's why like queer men are obsessed with women and like Cher or whatever. And it's like, I want to be able to fully channel without shame what's in me. And I think that like, I think people like see it in you and what you bring to that performance matched with like all of the idiosyncrasies of the character. And it's just like, I see that. I just so see it.
Oh shit. That was so nice. Oh my goodness.
Wow. I love that. There's such, I think it's the perfect, you know, convergence of like this performance having such a precision to it and being so fun, the writing being so developed and sort of clearly laid out in the parameters of the show. And in terms of the character, she is this compelling character who is one of the few morally centered people on the show, I think. Like, and she's like, and she's like competent, and she's like good at her job, and like the sort of, I would say it comes as a surprise that she is very good at litigating or just being in the courtroom. I mean, like there's not this level of like, oh wait, she's a bad lawyer. It's like, oh wait, like this person, there's this fun irony, and an irony that later on develops into like, oh yeah, of course, like this person like is good at what she does because she is one of the few good people on the show.
Characters. Yeah. Yeah. And also, not to keep talking, but also like with people that you, it's interesting, like when you're in a group of people, like in a writer's room, or that's not the right thing, but like whenever you're like around a new group of people, you always kind of like are looking for who's the person that you believe in the most, mm-hmm. in the group, like, and you're like, okay, who's got the right answers? And there will be somebody that you're like, it's always like at first you think, typically it's like at first you think this person has the right answers, and then the longer you stick with them, you're like, actually they don't. And but then there's this person that you're like, I discounted you, and now I see you're actually the secret star. Like, people can be both right and wrong, and it's really hard to express the connective tissue between the right and wrong moments when you're like writing a character. Mm-hmm. But that's why like Shalita brings like a soul, and then it's like, oh, okay, it's all glued, you know.
Wow. I mean, we can't follow that up with anything. Thank you to my guests, Charles Rogers, Shalita Grant. I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful day, week, month, year. Everyone is rightfully obsessed with Search Party, with Cassidy, with everybody. So thank you.
Thank you, Bowen. It was nice
thank
to
you,
meet
Bowen.
You.
Great. Perfect. Wow, was that an interesting deep dive into the human psyche or what? Once again, I'd like to thank Charles Rogers and Shalita Grant for joining us and discussing the theme of obsession in Search Party. I think I'm obsessed with that conversation. On a personal note, I just wanted to mention how much I've loved sharing these conversations with you over the last 2 months as the host of Search Party, the podcast. I'm sorry to say that this is the final episode of the season, but the good news is that season 4 of Search Party, the show, will be available to stream on HBO Max starting tomorrow, January 14th. So you may want to cancel your plans for the rest of the week, but who am I kidding? You'll probably watch it all in one sitting because I know I will. Thanks again to all of our guests, as well as the creative teams at iHeartMedia and HBO Max. We couldn't have done it without you. Search Party the Podcast is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio. It's executive produced by Ethan Fixell, produced and written by Jonah Bayer, written and researched by Marissa Brown, and engineered, edited, and mixed by Matt Stillo. If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed Search Party the Podcast, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you might get your podcasts. And don't forget to watch season 4 of Search Party, premiering January 14th, only on HBO Max.